to a brand new, fun-filled, exciting, and maybe even stress-inducing episode of Fans of Power this week. I'm Tyler Baker, T-Rex to some, and who knows what I am to others. I'm sure somebody's got probably different names for me. Who knows out there? But and of course, as always, is the Rotten Amato himself, Joe Amato.
That's right. I'm Joe Amato to some, and Joe Amato to others. I don't know. So there you go. That's all I know.
You very well could be Joe Amato to others.
There you go. Well,
so I guess before we dive right into a tag team of stories for the day here, Joe's got some news to share with the good listeners.
Yeah, well, first I was going to say, just for everybody that was wondering, Super 7 is finally taking the pre-orders, if you will, for the Ultimate figures. I believe they're doing that up to November 30th. I think, if I'm not mistaken, Tyler, is it November 30th, I believe?
I couldn't tell you since I wasn't going to get any of that stuff.
Oh, okay. Well,
I'm waiting for new figures to come out, so that I have no idea on this stuff.
Okay, well, it's November 30th, and they're $35. Like I said, and that's a pretty good deal, especially for people that, you know, were wanting Tila to begin with, and they don't want to pay $150 on the secondary market. And the same thing with Ram Man. He's kind of expensive, but all the figures come with a lot of bonus stuff, extras. Ram Man doesn't. He just has his, like, repaint colors. But either way, they're up there. They're till November 30th. So if you want, go to Super 7, do it. And the cheaping, I'm sorry, not the cheaping, the shipping is cheap in the USA. I had a couple friends who got all five figures. And in the USA, certain parts, it was only $8 to ship. That's it. And I mean, and just, I was like, $8 shipping on five figures? But international fans apparently are the ones that maybe are paying a higher price, but they said they're addressing that, and they're going to try to make sure that hopefully by November 30th, they can get that down. So it'll be a little, you know, a little more reasonable, because I guess it was kind of expensive and some international fans were worried, but for the international fans, they said they're going to try to get it down. So that's just a little bit of news that I figured I'd shoot out for Super 7. And that's about it for the recent news.
Yeah, no, I guess I think it was said that they're planning to release reveals for, I think, new classic figures in December. Whichever article was concerning that. I'm like, okay, so maybe come Christmas time, we'll have some new faces to look forward to purchasing here in the future. So,
exactly.
People may not know that. Look towards December, mid-December. Exactly.
Right. And for the vintage fans, the Curse of the Three Terror figures, those are also on their website too, and they're in their actual painted colors now. So those who thought the glow-in-the-dark ones just a little look too similar or strange, hey, you can check out the painted ones. Pretty cool, and I think those might be $25 a piece. So that's for the vintage fans, also on Super7Store.com. So from that, I was going to say, and I'll let you start it off, but first I wanted to give a nice shout-out to, it's Michael Montiagudo, and he's the one that suggested a topic for us to talk about today. It's The Warlords of Eternia. It's a story that was in one of the Lady Bird books from the UK, but it's one of the bigger ones, not those smaller story books that, you know, each individual one of those was its own story, but they had a big one. It's almost like an annual size, if you remember some of those UK annuals for other stuff, and I think those had multiple stories, but he wanted us to, you know, discuss that because I said, hey, if anybody has any suggestions, he brought it up, and it's a pretty cool story. So, Tyler, I'll let you start off, and then we could just flow with it.
Story was pretty good. It definitely kind of felt, I think it took a while for that story to get off. And being is that I'm not this is probably the first story from a Lady Bird book I've ever looked at or read. I've always just been more inclined to go with the golden books and things like that, stuff that was more accessible to me here, but I was well aware of the Lady Bird books, their fan following, and you know, the stuff out of Germany too as well, and
right,
assortment of other different incarnations of the mythology and stuff like that. So this is my first one. Artwork was good. Some of it I had seen before, like that one.
Do you think they used the same? Is it possible that I think the artist who worked on that one worked on all of those Masters Lady Bird books? It looked like it was similar to me. Like, it looked like it's the same artist who did all the Masters Lady Bird books. I could be wrong, but
He probably did alone because, the artwork doesn't take up a whole lot of the, the pages. It's not like, big splash pages of large artwork. It's, condensed, and it's, sometimes it's just a character with no background at all, kind of things like that. So it may be, but I will say this, me personally, and I want to keep this because when people have something that they're passionate about and they want to hear others talk about it, definitely don't want to come off, I'll just come out and say, I couldn't stand the narrator. I could not stand the guys. I just felt, for me personally, and I was only, I think there was only one book on tape that I heard as a kid, and it was, I was more about the actual book and the artwork and the story. The tape was just like,
I guess
just
just
did
so
it
you could
for me.
clarify, basically, this the one that we read, if you will, it wasn't really reading. We listened to the audio version that was on YouTube. So, okay.
So I assume this is the this audio was available with the book. Like, I guess when you purchased it, it came with either like a record or an audio cassette tape, for you to put in your, stereo to listen to, or your little tape player, what have you, because a lot of us as kids had little tape players and stuff like that. But
Right.
it just came off as a very, very lazy, if this guy ever did books on tape, well, he would put me to sleep pretty quick.
Was different.
It was just, I just, and that's why I don't want to trash it too much, because obviously, he sent it in, and obviously he likes this story, so I definitely don't want to go in, because the story was fine. It was cool
It
to
was a
see
good
Peter
story.
being given some a lot of stuff to do, but that narrator, oh my gosh, I just, at times I'm like, oh boy, this could be a long 30 minutes, man.
Yeah, because it's a 30-minute story. I mean, it's nice. Like I said, at least we got to listen to it because he did tell the story. And, yes, maybe it was a little off how he said it, and maybe certain areas enunciating things. It was like, okay, I think you meant to say it this way. But hey, I mean, basically, he got the
Well,
story going.
and I will say this, and this is something that I guess I have to blame the writer on this. When they said that Eternia apparently has highways and city lights and stuff like
That
that, I'm picturing like the hustle and bustle of the royal palace and stuff like that. You got, Prince Adam's got like, his briefcase, and he's looking at his watch, and Duncan's
sounded
trying to cross the street, and hey, get out of the way. And you got Rain Man's running a battle ram, through the streets, and people won't get out of his way, and
was different. And that was towards, I think, the end of it, if I'm not mistaken, when they mentioned that reference. Now, what it was is basically the story is, Skeletor, of course, always trying to conquer, the palace and do his thing. He wants to get some soldiers ready for a battle. He actually calls upon Zodak, which that's what's cool. This is the first time, at least from my memory. I'm sure in other media he's maybe had it in some kind of international magazine, but he's definitely evil in this book. He calls for Zodak to train these troops that he has and get them for war. So when they're going into battle, it almost felt like those old medieval style battles too. They got one side of all, the evil and the side of good, and all the Eternian soldiers are on their versions of Stridor. Did they all have like a Stridor? They all had their own
The
horse.
stride.
And so they had that. They go into battle, and of course, the good guys win. Skeletor is upset. He sends, I guess, Zodak apparently says, "I'm sending you to the sulfur mines because you failed me." So, the sulfur mines seem like it's something he likes using in at least this story, maybe some of the others. But so he sends them off, and then he's wondering, what can he do? And that's when Evil Lyn says, maybe we can look to the past to find somebody that can help you, in a fight. And there's legend of some character named the Warlord from back in, the ancient times of Eternia. And there's legends of maybe being able to time travel. And the time traveling is supposedly it can be done in, well, the sands of time, which we've heard of before. And they have to go back there. And when they go back there, they're going to take Beast Man with them. They want to have one warrior to go with them. So when they travel, like I said, I'll just give a quick roundup and then we can discuss parts. But so they go back into the past. And when they go back there, that's when then they see because in the sands of time, it's all just sand and ruins or whatever. But when they travel back in time, then I think it's like there's lush land. They see cities in the background and they decide to go later to go. Oh, and by the way, I think they went back in time. Was it 2,000 years in time? Was it
I can't
2,000?
remember. It certainly seemed like it was a pretty pretty good ways
Yeah,
back.
that's what I meant, because it wasn't like just 200, it was 2,000. I kept thinking, Jesus. So when they go back, I mean, there's, again, like you said, there's lush looking city, the environment is better, the soldiers look like they're in basically almost, regular Eternian garb you'd see 2,000 years in the future. So everything looks modern, but they assume when they get Skeletor, Evil-Lyn, and Beastman, they like take them, if you will, prisoner or something, but they think Beastman is the leader. And they think that Skeletor and Evil-Lyn are his servants. And so he's a warrior. I guess the warlord liked how Beastman fought, and he says, "Can you train my soldiers?" Because he liked how he used his whip, because 2,000 years in the past, they couldn't use their energy weapons. Because, like Skeletor tried to use his Havoc staff, it had no effect. Evil-Lyn tried to use her staff, no effect. And Beastman, his whip was referred to, I think, as a laser whip, or was it energy whip,
This is
maybe?
probably one part of the story I almost felt like I had to call foul on. I kind of just felt like in a land of magic and fantasy and sword and sorcery and science all in the one, and but to go back in the past, it's like, well, batteries don't work well because they didn't have them then, so you can't use them now. That's probably the only thing part of the story I just felt like I'd have to throw a flag
How's
down
that guy called?
and
Penalty, penalty.
say, we gotta review this
Yeah,
here.
because now that's what's strange, because you figure, Jesus, Skeletor should still be able to use magic. He's got magic within him, so is Evil-Lyn. I don't think it all derives from their weapons, but well, either way, it was the way of getting a gimmick across of, okay, that the energy couldn't work. But Beastman, even though it's a energy whip, however they labeled it, he still has a whip, though, and he can still use that whip, and he's taking care of the warlord's, soldiers like they're nothing. And he likes how he fights, and he basically says, "Can you train my soldiers to do this? And you can rule with me. You could, have all the riches and all the power. You can rule alongside with me." But Beastman actually thinks, like, what should I do? Should I do this or still protect the people? Because like his one side, his human side is thinking one thing, his beast side is thinking another. Like, I should still serve Skeletor. So he's like, well, if I do this and I train all your soldiers, could you let them go? And I think the warlord said, well, you'll have to fight in an arena. And if you could beat like this beast or whatever, then yes, you're all free to go. So Beastman does end up using, I mean, his abilities, and he wins, and they eventually can go back. But now we can start picking apart certain things, like how you were saying, even with the energy things, of what you thought about basic parts of the story and characteristics.
The beginning kind of seemed like it was just kind of a something that sounded like it was going to be so epic, and then it's just kind of like quickly dismissed an army that's assembled of orcs and trolls and various other creatures and stuff like that are just kind of thrown together or put together and trained by Zodak, which I don't think Zodak's even featured in the book. You just hear him
Yeah,
or hear them.
exactly. Yeah.
They make him as if like he's. The Golden Book hardcover books used to do that a lot, mention characters that are not drawn.
Yeah, because clarify
But
that for the fans at least, to let them know that this is one of those kind of story books, if you will, where there's one picture and then tons of text. So it's not like a comic where you're seeing
yeah,
multiple
no.
panels.
There's lots of dialogue. A picture or one kind of splash picture or even a picture with no background, just Skeletor just kind of standing there. And that's it. So there is some illustration. The artwork is pretty good in it too. But it's just kind of it just 'cause, kind it just was so, like, such an epic kind of throwaway thing to have this large army assemble. And you think what's gonna? I mean, to include that the army's like fighting with itself and. Can't work together, but then they get there, and then they're just kind of easily just chased away by, the Royal Guard and Man at Arms and Striders, and you just kind of felt like, well, that was kind of, grandiose, but very just kind of thrown in.
Anticlimactic, like you're waiting, like, yay, and then, oh, man.
I just kind of felt overall Skeletor's whole part was just kind of like, not what you'd expect for him to, concoct this scheme of going back in time, and immediately he's thrown behind bars, and Beastman kind of takes over the story.
Oh, and to a
Which would,
side note, just to let everybody know, He-Man had, I believe, no mention. Not
yeah,
only did he not
not
appear,
in
no mention.
nobody, yeah, n not a single heroic warrior is featured in it. I think Man at Arms was featured in it, and
And you
the
heard
war,
King Grandor, but you didn't see him, but I think they mentioned King
yeah,
Grandor, but yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty much just a pretty short or concise story with just Evelyn Beastman and Skeletor going back to the past. And the Warlord kind of looks like that Wayne character from the Flash Gordon movie. I can't remember what his name was. People who love Flash Gordon, they know what I'm talking about.
Okay.
But that's who the Warlord kind of looks like if you never have seen this story. But, you know, it wasn't a bad story. It was all right, I guess, for, you know, the moments that I felt like kind of Skeletor kind of was kind of wasted pretty much in the story. But,
Do you
and
think
his
that was to
team.
make it Beastman's time to shine? Because that's what's cool. You never really see a good shining moment like
And
that
that's why
where.
I feel like that should have been based more about, as opposed to we got this big story, putting this big army together, and Zodak is training him, and that fails. What can we do? Well, we go back to the past, and then Skeletor's kind of thrown on the back burner. If it had been established earlier on that Beastman is, like, you know, kind of coming to scrutiny, that he's never given the credit where credit's due as being a loyal henchman, and, you know, Skeletor quickly dismisses him like he does so many times, and to go back to the past. And then Skeletor is kind of like, you know, tied behind, you know, hands tied behind his back, and Beastman's kind of given like this position to, like, you know, showcase his talents, and he's respected and can be seen as a very fierce person. That's the kind of story I felt like it was two different stories that kind of crossed paths, you know, halfway through, and you kind of felt like, well, that story no longer means anything, and we're taking off in another direction. You
It
know,
was.
not, I mean, it certainly was not, you know, it's not like the trap. You know,
Oh,
that
good.
story
No,
from
no.
like,
You won't mention that. No, but what I've
no,
got.
but it just kind of felt like we're changing gears abruptly, and then just, oh yeah, we need to wrap up this kind of storyline about the whole getting an army from the past kind of thing at the very end. So.
And what I think, what I liked about it, now, this is just my interpretation of it, not saying this is how it was meant to be. But if you notice what how it started off, Skeletor's ready to go into war. He gets Zodak to train all these orcs and trolls and all his warriors, and Zodak fails him. And so Evelyn mentions, of course, go to the past, find this warlord character. He's a great soldier we can bring to the future to help. And they're like, well, let's take Beastman. Now, what's weird is it's like, oh, let's take him. Like, eh, he's a fighter. But then what happens? Beastman trains an army that gets them fantastic, like, you know, they're really ready for war and the warlord respects him. Almost makes me think it's like they were trying to show you, Skeletor, you had right in front of you all along a warrior that could have trained your trolls and orcs. You had Beastman. That's what was
Yeah,
kind of
that's a
cool. It's
good
like,
point.
yeah, it was. And I think that's what they were trying to get across there is like Skeletor didn't realize he had in front of him a great soldier that he should have just tried to respect Beastman. And I guess going to the past, he's seen what happened that. Look what Beastman did. So maybe he could possibly in the future realize Beastman is your man. This is the guy you should have went to. You didn't have to go to the outside source to get Zodak, who failed you. And I think even then didn't even threaten then Beastman, like, I'll send you to the sulfur mines too. I don't know what it is with the sulfur mines, but
Yeah, it's kind of like that twist that the audience knows that, well, Skeletor, well, you have it, you just clearly don't know it, and you don't really seem to care to acknowledge it. So that's why Skeletor fails, because he clearly had what he wanted. He just was too blind to see it. So
yeah.
yeah, it does kind of have a moral kind of, if you look hard enough, yeah, there is kind of a moral to that story kind of thing. Or not necessarily like, you know, be sure to brush your teeth before going to bed kind of moral, but like,
But just to look in
you
front of you,
know, what
sometimes
you
you have.
want is right there in front of you the entire time, which is a message we've seen in movies and books and TV and television and all that stuff. So.
Right, and we have to, in a way, figure out the message ourselves. It's not like the Filmation cartoon that told you the message. With these, it's either maybe they just didn't, or you just had to get your own message out of it. So that's what you get out of it. And the thing is, because Beastman really was debating at the end when they were going back to where they had to get into their device to go back to the future. Did I just say back to the future? Well, I had to, but yes, yeah, so I go back to
Back to the future.
yeah, go back to the future. Beastman sat there for a second and even thought. Should I stay? Like, you know, maybe Evelyn and Skeletor can go. If I stay, maybe I could rule with Warlord. But then Skeletor grabs him by the arm and then pulls him in, and they all go. And Beastman, I think, is the one that has the last thought or comment in that story. And that's maybe one day, maybe I'll, you know, when the moons, because they had to wait for the moons to be aligned in a certain time in a year or whatever. But he was even debating, should I go back to the past one day myself and rule with the Warlord? That was the last thought of that, is what Beastman would do. So.
Yeah.
It was a very good story. Like I said, I'm so glad that Michael suggested that because I've never read that. I have the other small Lady Bird books, but I've never got that big annual, and it was a fun story.
I think about, I just had the chance to, this kind of flew back to me. I may have to retract that thought about calling foul on them not being able to use their powers, because I not that it has been, but it has been done before to a certain extent in the Time Corridor episode from season one of Filmation, where Man at Arms goes back in time and his blaster, wrist blasters don't work, and they say, "Oh, it's because you're in the past." But then they abruptly start working when the story calls needs it to be convenient enough. But there is a hint of like the past does not cooperate with future technology. So I will retract that statement about calling
Okay.
foul on that one.
You'll take it back. So, but
Yeah, I'll
all in
take it
all,
back.
yeah, so all in all, fun one. Like I said, you guys can go to YouTube and do just what I mean, Michael suggested that he gave us the link and just type in Warlords of Eternia. And you can listen to and see the story on YouTube, and it was a fun one. So, Michael, I really appreciate you suggesting it because it was a fun topic to discuss and a good story to talk about.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah. So now we go for some a really cool story to something that some fans really love, some really hate. I don't know, Tyler. Go ahead. You could start it off. I know you've been dreading this, but do you want to talk about He-Man Thundercats issue two? Now, the first issue, remember, I was pretty for it. I said there were certain elements that, yes, I didn't like. Sure, just like any story, but I still thought it was pretty good, and I do love the art. And then we come to issue two. I like the art. What did you think of the story? Now, guys, he's silent. This usually does not happen with Tyler. He usually talks. First of
There's
first, wait, hold
no.
on, hold up. Is there any redeeming thing before you start dissecting it? Is there anything redeeming?
No. In every language I could possibly say the word no, I would say it. Which, nine, no, nay, eno, whatever. Negative. No, this is in fact, after reading it, I decided to step out of my apartment and walk around town and have like a thinking montage with Stan Bush playing, music behind me as I'm walking around thinking about what I'm doing. Stan Bush, the guy who did music for the early Van Damme movies, Kickboxer, Bloodsport. So I'm doing like a montage around town, thinking about what should I do after reading this story? What do I do? And I came upon a local business, which I'll reveal that towards the end of the story as to what kind of business that was. It's my full response and what I intend to do after reading this book.
Okay.
However, I th this was this is so bad. This is really, really bad, and I feel like if people like it. And look, th this is not a, I can't remember if I said this in the last one, but this is not a story where, the last guy's last name is David. I don't know what his first name is. Let me just get this straight. This man has no business writing for this comic book. And really anything else for that matter, because he obviously does not know Thundercats, and he certainly does not know anything about He-Man.
Can I jump real
He's
quick?
not.
Real quick, can I jump to say one thing? Okay. Now, again, there was parts in the first issue that I thought was good, other parts, eh. And then I've seen a lot of debates about it. And the people that would defend it, again, more power. If people like it, hey, you're entitled to like a story. We're not saying hate this story. But it was apparently said that when they were going to do this crossover comic, apparently it was said, this is going to be something that it's its own standalone story that has nothing to do with anything you've ever read or He-Man or Thundercats before. Now, I hate hearing that kind of response because whether it was truly said or a fan just said that's what they thought they heard, that to me is all, it's like almost an excuse for lazy writing. And if you make mistakes, you're like, hey, I said it was going to be its own story. I don't like it. What do you think fans were expecting after 30 years to finally see He-Man and Thundercats combined? They're expecting some stuff that, dream matchups. Now, sure, you're going to have a unique story, But taking so many elements and completely changing and dismissing stuff, that's, of course, you're going to have fans be upset. So, like I said, it's nothing wrong with creating a unique story, but when you're changing certain elements of canon and making stuff that's like contradicting stuff, that is going to upset people. So, again, if people like it, really, no problem. I hope you enjoyed the story. But when I, like I said, first issue, okay, but when issue two came out, and I had a lot of issues with it, and Tyler did too. You're having two people that are super hardcore fans that usually try not to complain. But when you have people like us complain, and all the other Masters fans and Thundercat fans, what do you think's the moral of the story then? It's like you guys are really messing stuff up. Try to please the fans so you get better stuff. But if people just don't say anything and settle for stuff that possibly is bad, and nobody speaks up, then more and more people will just write garbage and garbage and garbage, and our canon gets watered down more and more and more. So, like I said, it's not dismissing a new story, it's just what you're doing to the property. It really is butchering at times. So, I'm
Well,
gonna
it's just
go.
it's extremely bad fan fiction. I mean, everything that's thrown in here, there is no memorable, for the first time, somebody meeting somebody from Thundercats and He-Man. No, there is no big epic moments at all. Everything is so rushed, and I mean, like, I don't know if it's, and it's not like this thing is completely packed out with ads. Like DC's like, we're gonna fill this whole thing with a bunch of ads. We'll drag the story out over the span of a year because we'll just fill it up with ads and a couple pages. No, there's plenty of panels in this book, and it's all bad. Every single bit of it here. I mean, it's just they went on to some old He-Man website from 1999 or 2000, just dug around and found some old fan fiction on one of the many He-Man websites that were around at the time. I know what I'll do. I'll just copy this,
You know,
or.
I agree. It almost felt like a fan fiction story. Not that fans can't write, because they can write
Oh,
some
no.
crazy
Listen,
stuff.
I'm not knocking the idea of fan. This is
But
just like professional novelists and writers can have duds or bad stories. This is a bad story.
yeah, just
Bad,
bad.
bad.
Yeah, because okay, I heard audio. I thought Doug was coming in for a second.
Yeah, well, that was me. I was trying to sneak in, but then someone like sent me a message and it threw off my phone and everything. Actually, I was going to chime in and point out. None of this book is being written by DC Comics. This is written by the guy who works for Mattel. Mattel head writer and Masters of the Universe lead creative Rob David and supervising producer Lloyd Goldfein are the ones writing this, and they actually work for Mattel, and their job is to oversee the storyline going into new media like video games, comic books, and possibly any future animated or live action material.
Well, thank you for jumping in with that, because yeah, if that's any indication of possibilities of things that could happen, then we're not in for a good future of
No,
stuff.
we're in trouble.
Yeah, because
Which, I remember reading that the guy who worked for Mattel and was kind of running, I guess, whatever, of course. It's kind of hard to think that now because the He-Man line has been passed over to Super 7, but I guess the ball had already been rolling by that point. And you almost kind of felt like, all right, well, that might be all right, but and I'm sure good guy, nice guy, doesn't know crap from apple butter, about Master of the Universe and definitely not Thundercats.
the Thundercat. Oh, that's the biggest butchering. There is no knowledge. That's what I want to say. People quit defending and saying that this is its own story. They're trying something new. No, you could tell they really had zero knowledge on the Thundercats. They probably just sat there and YouTubed a couple episodes, got confused with stuff. There's no respect to the Thundercat fans. Masters fans, there's more at least things we can reference and know, but some of that got butchered. It's just. Okay, well, as at the end of the first one, because here's spoiler alert, obviously we're going to talk about this now, but the end of the first comic, Skeletor basically turns Mumra into dust. He's now working for the ancient spirits of evil. Apparently Skeletor is. So in this one, he has to take Mumra's ashes, mix them with some potion or whatever, and drink it so Skeletor can become ever-living. Because apparently Skeletor has, you know, been working with, you know, the ancient spirits and found out that, well, you know, anybody that's evil or not worthy who tries to hold He-Man's sword or whatever, you know, like, it won't allow them to have the power, or it hurts them or attacks them. But apparently somehow by becoming ever-living like Mumra, he can hold the sword. I'm like, I don't understand. Wait, are you saying it's because he's undead and he can't die? Or you, what does that mean? Is Mumra worthy? I don't even understand, because my mind was just fried when I heard this.
Because the writer doesn't understand.
Yeah,
he's making this stuff up as he goes along. You just clearly tell he just. I mean, I just feel like, you know, just you. The whole approach here, from using the classics figures as if, like, you know. It's a toy line for just adult collectors, as if, like, we don't know what the traditional look of these characters looks like.
Yeah.
It just feels like, from the visual design of how, what they're using with the actual characters, everything is lazy. You know, it's just like, you know, you didn't want to really do your research. And if they did, you like you said before, Joe, they clearly took, you know, a few moments out of their day to watch maybe an episode or two of Thundercats, went to Wikipedia, looked up a couple of quick facts.
Yeah.
And then decided, well, guys, you can make up your own thing. You can do your own thing, which is why we have ideas like Snake Mountain was created to honor the ancient spirits of evil.
Yeah, just supposedly.
Dog is aware of the planet of Eternia. I'm like, there's no mystery here.
Right.
There is, everything is just like, no. Everybody's sleeping with each other, or everyone's still related to each other. Next thing we're going to find out, Heman and Lionel were really blood brothers, or, you know, King Randor slept with Lionel's mother.
Yes, some like nonsense.
Who knows what we'll find out?
Because
this is more of the same crap we got in the bios, where everybody's related to each other. There is no, like, distant galaxies. No, everything is connected. And, like, that's not storytelling.
That was annoying, yeah, especially supposedly a fifth ancient spirit of evil, a female snake.
My head hurts.
Yes, I know some female snake ancient, and she disappeared or was never heard of, but Snake Mountain was erected in her honor, and Skeletor used the golden discs of knowledge to find out all of this information, which, okay, apparently if you guys are supposed to be doing your own story and it has nothing to do with what we know, then you're obviously pulling the golden discs of knowledge, so you know references of filmation there, so trust me. They were taking references from cartoons and other stuff and trying to make a story and mix it up. But yeah, the whole thing, I'm going to say it again, people. Blue Spirit Jaga can only be seen by Lionel from the Thundercats. No other Thundercat has ever seen him in the cartoon in his blue spirit form. The one thing they always quote that they get confused about is an episode where Lionel pulled Jaga from the astral plane to battle Groon. When he was pulled from the astral plane, he was in basically what you would want to see as his flesh colors, like as if he was alive. That's the only time they've seen him since, but trust me, no Thundercats can see the blue spirit Jaga except Lionel. So when they wrote that part at the beginning, that is a big thing that Thundercat fans went nuts about. Masters fans and uncertain Masters websites or communities are trying to defend that. It's like, why are you defending it? You're, you know, hey, if something was butchered for Masters you didn't like, trust me, you'd be speaking up. So the Thundercat fans hate that part. They hate that a special moment that's only for Lionel is now for all the Thundercats. So I just wanted to get that out of the way. So anyways, in this one, we have Skeletor. He has to drink the potion. He becomes ever living then. And now he can hold the sword. And here's another moment. When he holds the sword, and now that apparently Skeletor's worthy, he says, "By the power of Grayskull, I have the power." Question. How does he know this? How does he know that incantation? Because believe me, he doesn't know that Adam and He-Man, remember in this storyline that they're making sure they let us know about, in this storyline, he doesn't know Adam and He-Man are the same person. So how does he know that incantation? And if somebody out there is going to try to tell me, well, it's when you hold it, and now that you're worthy, you just know the incantation. Well, here would be my reply back. Well, if you would know by holding the sword an incantation immediately, why didn't Mumra say it when Mumra held the sword in issue 1? because Mummer was holding it. So Mummer would have felt that same power, and he could have just said, by the power of Grayskull, I have the power. So that's my little thing in case somebody tries to defend how he said this magical phrase that only Adam He-Man knows. Am I wrong or am I right?
It gave Skeletor the script and told him, this is what's happening, so that way you know exactly what to say and all that.
Yeah, but you know what I'm you know where I'm coming from. You see what I'm saying, right?
It makes any. It's just lazy writing, and it's just like the guys. You could just picture him just kind of sitting there with his hand on his wrist, writing with one hand. Oh gosh, I just want to. Can I just hurry up and just watch? You know, the latest. You know, Beverly Hills Housewives. You know, marathon. And just finish this up so I can watch that.
So then we come.
It's just like everything from beginning to end. There is no. You know, great big moments where you would have thought the idea of He-Man meeting Mom-Ra would be a big epic moment. No, it's an afterthought. It's a fart in the wind. And the same thing is in this, you know, I'm jumping all over the place. You know, I don't respect this book enough or the story or anything they've done to really just go through chronologically here, because we get this moment that, you know, which you think would be built up to, you know, wrestling fans know all about, you know, you want to see a proper build-up for a pay-per-view. You just don't want to see some random feud thrown together and then have them say, well, give us $50 here for this feud that was just built up on a SmackDown this previous Thursday, you know, instead of building it up for several months here. No. We get the Evil Warriors and the Mutants. They're just aligned, already there. We don't know how. We don't know why. We don't get this big epic moment of the Mutants clashing with the Evil Warriors, butting of heads, you know, getting, you know, their initial reaction to each other, like that fans would want to see. No, they're just already tag teaming together here.
Yeah.
Quirky and funny, because Vulture Man, Trap Joel, and Triclops are throwing little jabs.
Let's cover that. Aren't
falling off for the Brady Bunch first season, you know, where it's just right. Like, this isn't funny on any level whatsoever.
And let's talk about that part, because, okay, first, like you said, immediately then He-Man is in battle with all the Mutants and Evil Warriors, and again, I do love the art. Like I said, if the art was horrible in this comic, I think I would have been done with the comic already, because first we got a bad story. But if you would have bad art, it's like there's no redeeming factor. So this art is keeping me. So Freddie Williams, I mean, you know, thank goodness you're at least doing this, because you are keeping me in this book. Even though it's hard, I'm still going to be sticking around. But so we get into this battle, just like Tyler said. And there's some cool fights, I'll admit. I like certain moments. But that dialogue you're speaking of, while some might find it funny, I found it stupid because, again, do they know Thundercats? Do they know Vulture Man? Vulture Man is one of their inventors. He's smart. He's not stupid. So why is it Vulture Man, apparently, if he's around, you know, Trapjaw and Triclops, and they're already familiar with each other, he apparently fumbles their names. And Vulture Man says, Trijaw and Trapclops or something. I think that's what he says, Trapclops and Trijaw. Like, he messes up their two names.
Yeah, it's an excuse of humor.
Well, here's what's stupid about it. You think Vulture Man doesn't understand what three is and try? Wouldn't you just look at Triclops and understand that's why it's try? Why would you say try and then jaw? You'd look at Trap Jaw. That wouldn't even make sense. And then here comes Trap Jaw's comeback where he calls him Vulture Pants. I was like, Vulture Pants? What is this? Is it in, like, first grade? It's like poopy pants? It was a stupid comeback. Like, wouldn't he say, if you're trying to be clever with calling people names back and forth, instead of Vulture Man, he could have said Vulture Woman or something that at least made sense, but Vulture Pants.
Unless, so you know, they'd be doing, like, your mama jokes and stuff like that.
Yeah,
you know?
It was dumb. It was stupid. So here comes the fight then. There is some good battling. There's, you know, and He-Man's starting to take care of this person. And then as all this talking's going on, I couldn't remember. I think it might have been Jackalman where he said something like, you know, beast, you know, talk, humans, but beasts kill. And when he says beasts kill, he swings his, like, axe, and he swings with the blunt end into He-Man. I'm like, okay,
yeah, which doesn't make too much sense, because, you know,
right.
Before I attack you, let me hit you with the soft part of the weapon here.
Yeah,
you know?
And by making his statement, he said, beasts kill. Bang, he hits him with the blunt end. I was like, okay, if it's beasts kill, why didn't you try to then use the actual blade? So that was a stupid moment. But then He-Man's going back and forth. He uppercuts, I think, Jackalman into, like, outer space or, you know, real high, which was cool. And then he does something we've seen before. He rips Well, not him, but we've seen Trapjaw's jaw get ripped off. He rips his jaw off, and then he throws the jaw into Triclops' eye. So that was pretty brutal. I mean, like I said, I enjoyed that kind of parts, but it was just kind of just the nonsense again of everything back and forth, blah, blah, blah. And then when Skeletor does transform into Super Skeletor, or He Skeletor, whatever you're going to want to call him, because now he has an, you know, that symbol on his chest. It's like into his actual skin. He's powered up. Then He-Man starts transforming back to Prince Adam, and he turns back to Prince Adam with that wound that he suffered in the first issue. And I don't know. Then I'm again, it's like, okay. Apparently now just, okay.
This is like, just, I'm looking at listening to it. It's like, man, it's like we're watching a really bad movie that's on Mystery Science Theater, you know, just, man.
It was, yes.
I've got to take some aspirin after we get done with this, man. I'm not kidding. My head right here is just, this is so messed up. And I don't get, this is why I stopped reading the previous DC stuff that they were doing. But this is really, really shameful writing here, man.
It was, It's not the best. That's what I mean. It was just all over everywhere. And of course, as he transforms back into Adam, you see him. I mean, he's with his father, King Randor. So now Randor knows this, blah, blah, blah. And then after that, you see Skeletor showing off his power, punching things in Snake Mountain. And here appears, out of nowhere, all the Thundercats. You know, it's like, okay, how did they even know? How did you even know where?
Yeah, how did they even get to Eternia when the last time we saw them is some sort of aftermath of an earthquake on Third Earth?
Well, I guess all you can assume is they took a ship into that portal. But either way, like you said, how did they know to go to Snake Mountain? Another thing is, you then see Wile E. Kit, which we've seen Wile E. Kit, I think, all the time in the cartoon. And these are the young Thunder Kittens, and we know how she looks. Well, now she has breasts. This isn't like how in that one story, the Wildstorm story you talked about, where she was older and she was a concubine.
Yeah, a fully grown adult version of Wile E. Cat.
Yeah, this is a kid.
Is fully developed physically. This is an 11-year-old, and we can ask our friend, good friend Thomas Guetta, excuse me. Sorry, Thomas.
You got it.
Confirmed with the voice of Lino himself over that.
Yeah, Lino.
And that if Lino felt that they were 11 or 12 years old, who's going to argue with the Lord of the Thundercats themselves?
Yeah, Larry Kenny.
Anybody who wants to try and defend that, well, Wile E. Kid has hit puberty because, well, just like, you know, and our girls are hitting puberty at early age, or whatever your logic is. I mean, even though that was something that, you know, Joe and Thomas were talking about this before I actually picked it up. So I checked out of this book the minute I saw that Snake Mountain was made to honor the ancient spirits of evil. So everything else after that was just, I was completely numb to. And honestly, even before getting to that and actually seeing it, I was just like, I don't care.
It was
I don't care because
it was a whole book of confusion. I feel bad because believe me, we want this to be good. Me and Tyler and all Masters fans, we want new stories. We want it to be good. So it's not like we're saying, hey, be glad you have something, if that's somebody would say.
No. And that's the whole point. And I've heard that discussion before, that people are just like, well, if we don't buy this, then Mattel or DC or whoever owns whatever form of media you're looking for, they won't make anymore if we don't buy the crap they're forcing down our throats right now. You know, it's like, no. And that's why I would just like, you know what? I want to buy quality, and I would rather buy nothing than spend money on something that's just going to upset me and say, well, clearly they're hiring people who don't really care about what they're giving to fans. And this is not an idea of like where, you know, they're making like a spinoff title of Spider-Man or Batman and the mythology is slightly different in this universe or something like that. No. This guy is clearly trying to establish familiar things that are in the Thundercats cartoon in the He-Man cartoon, but is constantly falling on his face on every page.
Right, and that's my point. See, that's the thing. If we had a lot of media out there for Masters and Thundercats right now, like if there was multiple comics and other things and even cartoons, and something like this came along, hey, you got a lot of media, sure, okay, maybe that could be something different. But when you're getting this as being your only comic source for Thundercats and He-Man fans in years, and you do this, yes, people are going to speak up. I mean, I have been seeing in so many Masters groups, and all the Thundercat fans, the majority are not pleased at all with this. I haven't heard any of them pretty much say anything positive.
They should be pissed off because the Thundercats have gotten the shorthand short end of the stick, whatever phrase you want to use, through both issues. You know, even though we're only in issue two here, you'd expect the Thundercats to have a more pivotal part in the story here, but clearly this guy is more about He-Man, which, you know, with the story you're trying to tell, it needs to be even Steven here. And the Thundercats are clearly being neglected.
Yeah, I think they're probably going to in issue 3, 4, whatever, I think they'll try to pick it up from that. And this is what I also am tired of seeing. I hate doing the back and forth between reading the narration and then the actual dialogue of the story, then the narration. It's like, okay, what are we in issue 3? Are we going to have like the narration now be from Orko and then the sorceress? And it's like, leave it alone. Okay, we already had the one from Skeletor in issue 1. We had Lion-O do it in issue 2. Quit it. Let us just read the story. If you're going to try to give us a good story, just give us the story and quit this other stuff. Here's the other thing. I just want to let everybody know, like I said, we do this podcast because, like I said, we're trying to share our passion and love. If there's something we don't like, sure, it's going to happen. We're not trying to sound negative because, as you know, we're always trying to be cool with everything. We don't get paid to do this podcast. We don't have endorsements. We're not working for Mattel. We're not working for anybody. It's all just out of love and fun to do this. So that's what you're getting. You're getting honest opinions. We're not trying to sugarcoat it and be nice when something's bad, when you really want to say something. If there's something bad, we're going to say it. So that's what I mean. It's we're giving an honest opinion. I'm not saying people have to agree with us because there's people that probably love it. And again, if you love it, great. I mean, love and enjoy it. But we're two fans that, like I said, we just, you know me, I barely speak negative, and Tyler doesn't really speak negative at all either. But this time it just had to be said. I really stood in there for the first issue and still enjoyed parts. But beyond the art in this, I enjoyed nothing in this story. And Tyler, I guess I'll just pass it to you for your final thoughts on what you thought of the story too.
I hate it with a passion. I hate the story. I hate this whole thing. It's just like, you know what? I think we're better off just letting fans come up with their own idea of a He-Man Thundercats crossover, because this is not what, you know, this could have been a story that went over an entire year, 12 issues of building it up, making the moment that He-Man meets Lion-O big, Mumra and Skeletor, that should be memorable. The two factions of evil warriors meeting for the first time, that ought to be a pivotal moment. No, everything is rushed, rushed, rushed. And I'm like, maybe that's something that Rob David had no control over. Don't know. But if it is, whoever made that decision to really condense a story with two big properties and what's supposed to be a very epic crossover, but for the fans, there is, it's just... You know, there are a lot of bad movies where it's just like you spend no time building up a character that you're supposed to care about to go through this story with them or him or her, whichever the case may be. There's nothing. It's just mindless fighting here. And you know what? My battles that I enjoy in movies, you build up to them. You build up to the big end boss fight in an Arnold or a Stallone or a Van Damme movie or a Chuck Norris movie or whatever the case may be, or you know, a James Bond movie or something like that. You build up to it. You don't just throw. Like none of it means anything.
All right.
And I'm out. I have officially. I went the next day and canceled my subscription to this. I'm not paying any more money to this book.
Oh, you canceled. You're not buying anymore. You're done.
No, for the next reviews until this story is over, Joe will be the only one purchasing it, and I will just listen to him tell me what you know, how bigger the wound has gotten for the fans here, because
that's saying something. That's pretty hard when Tyler is bowing out. I mean, again, guys, wow. I mean, I'm still, like I said, I'm still gonna buy it too, but Jesus, just hearing that from Tyler, that's just wow. I didn't realize you were out like that. And it, I mean, I like I said,
I don't have patience, you know. It's just like, look, you know, we went a long time with no new media, and I never in a million years thought we would get a new toy line until 2000X came out. That didn't last long. You know, it's and everybody has their kind of favorites of what they like better, and I enjoy all of it here. But in the last few years, we're not getting anything quality in the idea of entertainment. You know, the only thing we had for a while was the bios, and that was probably more negative than positive thing, but it's all we had. Then DC gets the comic book rights, and we get bad story after bad story with bad crossovers and stuff like that. And DC is just like, this is kind of beneath our roster of heroes and characters and villains. We'll just kind of dismiss it and whatever. No respect is given to this property here. and to finally be told we're going to get the crossover that we've all wanted to see here, and it's got there is no ounce of respect. And I'm sure there are people who don't know He-Man and Thundercats as in depth, and I'm not saying you should, but I just feel like for a good story, you're not getting that. And maybe obviously there's a fan for everything. If there's a fan for Batman and Robin, there's a fan for
this. And that's what's true. I mean, you do have to look at it like that. I mean, we know that, yes, there's going to be fans that maybe don't know the history of Masters and Thundercats as much as us or other fans, you know, everybody else. I mean, you know what I mean. But for those fans, they're just maybe just going to enjoy a story, and it could be good for them. But there's going to be fans like us and many other out there that when we know what the stories can be like, should be like, and we get something, we're going to speak up. So, I mean, I guess, like I said, I'm still going to go into all the other ones and hope and pray somehow gets a little better. But so you're holding issue two, and that's your last one you'll be buying then, huh?
Looking at it right here.
Oh, Jesus. Hold on. Oh.
No. It's such fun to read. It's wrong to destroy literature.
I don't, but now this is even freaking me out more. This shows, I'm not meaning to laugh because it's almost sad too. Guys, for the ones who are not watching this YouTube video right now.
Hopefully you heard the tears of joy.
That's not a joke what I just seen. Tyler just ripped issue two up and I've never seen nothing like that. I mean, that's
I've never done anything like that with a piece of an item that had the title He-Man or Thundercats on it. But this is not He-Man. It's not Thundercats, and it's not a crossover. This is the finest stool that you could find out of a toilet. You know, it's fresh and it stinks and it's steamy. You know, I'm not going to lose sleep over this. I'm not one of those people that's going to, no. I don't go on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram or anything else to start venting my frustration. No. This is between me and Joe here. Wow, and me speaking on the podcast for people who want to listen to it at their leisure. I'm not going to go on some sort of crusade and I demand this and I demand that. No, I'm not about that. This is for my own personal benefit.
That's got to be the,
so I'm out.
That is the coolest and craziest thing I've ever seen live. On anything, I guess that should show to writers and everybody. You just took and I seen one of the hugest, biggest fans of Masters just rip up a comic. I know that's just, it's bizarre. I mean, that's wow. Well, hey, I tell you what, I mean, maybe hey, give that away to somebody. Maybe there's a fan out there that would want Tyler's ripped comic to become a collectible one day. This is the hate from Tyler Baker from T-Rex. They'll love it. You just created a collector's item. Yeah, it's kind of
like
when
Bret Hart ripped out Shawn Michaels' hair and like Jim Cornette picked it up and took it to his wife and it might end up selling it on eBay. Somewhere.
You just created a collector's item and you're going to have to post pictures. So, well, I guess, yeah, that's it.
Well, I mean, all I have to do is, and this is my only copy. I didn't, you know, this is not just something I did for like, you know, well, I bought two copies, one I could tear. No, this is the only copy that I own of this comic.
Yeah, I think if anybody knows you, that. I mean, these things are $4, so yeah, yeah. Wow.
And even though it's $4, I don't like spending money on something that I'm just going to go home and be upset with and feel like, great, I wasted $4. I could have put that towards, you know, protein bars or going to a movie or Christmas presents with Christmas coming up. It's. I mean, I'm not dwelling over I wasted $4, but no, I'm not going to deliberately upset myself with something that I'm clearly this has not had the fans' in best interest in it. At least in my opinion, I don't think so at all.
You just created the most powerful moment from the most powerful.
Yeah, franchise. I probably want. I'd like to say maybe I'm a pioneer as like the first He-Man fan, Thundercats fan to destroy a form of media. Oof. But I know that there are people who've recorded themselves destroying stuff for like YouTube sensations, stuff like that. It's not what this is about. This is just me making a statement to Joe. I'm not reading these books anymore. And I'll just sit back casually with my hands on the desk here and let Joe just tell me, oh boy, well, it must have been great purchasing that third issue, you know. And
I was going to say, I guess, yeah, that's a statement.
And Joe was just like, it could get better than the second issue. I knew from issue one, this is not going to get any better. And if it takes to issue 4, 5, or 6 for something redeeming to happen, I'm like, you know what? It's too far gone by that point. And I bowed out after the first miniseries that DC wrote and got into the second one a little bit. I said, you know, I can't do this. And sure enough, I never heard anything that made me want to go back and like, okay, let me go back and get all these since I missed this. You know, I think Joe just stuck with it because he was trying to give it a chance and be loyal to it. To this day, Joe can't really tell me anything that he's just like, well, this issue, you know, is actually pretty cool. Like, no, he doesn't say that at all.
Like I said,
they had their fans. I'm not a fan of it, and I don't have to be a fan, just like people don't have to be a fan of the 87 movie.
No, you don't have to.
But I'm not going to go around and start destroying this book to people on, you know, publicly. No. It's not for me, and neither is this book.
No, it is. It's your right. I mean, there's people that, like you said, hate everything from me loving Meteorbs to other people hating them. You like the movie, people hating it, whatever. There's always love and hate. So you pretty much, you know, you did sum it up. Like I said, there's nothing I could say for the story that was redeeming, except I like the art, and it's sad I have to say that. But now from what you just did, it really is just going to be when there's episodes that come up and we're discussing the next issue, it is going to be me kind of just talking to myself, kind of like
random. And I'm going to contribute. I'm going to laugh and carry on and probably drink poison or something like that. You know,
drink Mumra's ashes. No.
Yeah. I'll drink Mumra's ashes. Maybe I'll just like, oh man, so high right now on the essence of you know, the ancient spirits of.
Yeah. So, okay. So we finished it up. That's our episode. I'm Tyler. Since we pretty much both got our, you know, feelings out on that and everything else, what are your closing, I guess, recommendations for anything, episodes, mini comics, or anything?
I'd say at this point, read any. Here's my recommendation. You want a quality comic strip? Read the comic strips on the Burger King kids cups. There's a lot more genuine logic. And I'm looking at the one about that concerns the evil horde, and they've captured Buzz Off. And when the He-Man arrives, they'll get him. There's more logic and action-packed story in this one little cup here with these few panels here than we've gotten in the two issues of the Thundercats He-Man crossover. So here's my recommendation. And if you read that one too fast, here's one about Spidor.
That's the best thing ever. Right, the Burger King cups have a better story on them than that. That is awesome. Oh, Tyler, you made my day just with that madness. Okay.
So that's my recommendation. Just anything from Filmation and anything from the original Thundercats cartoon, because I don't support the new one. I bowed out of that one earlier because the quality stunk in that one too. So
there you go. That's a whole other
pot. This is not an issue of nostalgia or like I'm holding on to childhood. I'm talking about quality.
Yeah.
And this is, you know, yeah. Those are my Oh, and a shout out to our good friend, Thomas Guerra, who heard my heartbreaking story about what Alan Oppenheimer did to me at Mad Monster in Charlotte 2 years ago.
Oh boy.
And got him to actually put the quote that I requested that Alan write on a 8x10 I had printed out. And apparently Alan had no problem writing out the quote.
Awesome.
For Thomas. So Thomas, out of the kindness of his heart, who runs the Thundercast, which a new episode of that will be up soon as well, did this out of the kindness of his heart. So thank you, Thomas, for allowing me to get what I wanted, which was this my favorite quote of Skeletor on an 8x10 of Skeletor. So, well, thank you, good sir.
Dang, that's awesome. That is cool, man. Wow, Thomas, that's awesome. See, people are going to be really cool. That's, Jesus, to give you something that you've always wanted like that and out of nowhere. Wow. Shows how nice people can be.
It was awesome. I can't thank him enough for that.
Okay, well, I'll be sure to have somebody sign, you know, these new issues of the Thundercats comics for you and stuff and send those off to you. But
by all means, and I can tear them up in front of you, too.
All right. Well, as for me, just always go to popculturenetwork.com, go to hemanworld.com, fansofpower.com, and on Facebook, go to Masters of the Universe He-Man and She-Ra Ultimate fan page. All great places, all great people. So until next time, have a powerful day.
Okay, USA.
Okay, I like that.